It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Ricker.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Thanks for joining us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Governor Walker received a glimmer of the national spotlight yesterday as the New York Times profiled his tight race for re-election and what it means for his possible presidential ambitions.
All eyes were on Wisconsin 2 years ago when the governor fought to keep his seat during a contentious recall election. After he became the first governor to win a recall, many Republican strategists were convinced Walker would be a strong contender for the presidency.
The flip side is that if Governor Walker doesn't win re-election this year, it may mean that the road to the presidency ends here.
Here to talk about how this election might affect the political future of Governor Walker is Joe Heim. He's a professor of political science at the UW-La Crosse. Joe, welcome back to Central Time.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, when Governor Walker won that recall election a couple years back, it convinced a lot of people that winning a second term wouldn't be too difficult. Was that a fair prediction at the time?
At the time, I think that was misread. If you looked at some of the polls, and there are very few that actually asked this question, he won more handily in the recall election, and the turnout was even better than it was 2 years earlier. I think it was 53-46, if I remember correctly. However, if you get into the people who voted for him and you look at the numbers in polls, a substantial number, and I remember seeing one poll that was about 7-10%, said they weren't voting for Walker but against the recall. And I think people misinterpreted that to mean, well, these people, 53-47, he's going to sail through to reelection. 6 months later, the governor's party lost the presidency handily in the state of Wisconsin. It tells you that Wisconsin can go both ways. So that's why I think this contest is so close. People may have said it's not fair to have a recall. It's got to be something more substantial than just policy differences. But it didn't mean they were committed to voting for him into the future. And I think he's got a 4-year term that he has to stand on now.
When we look at the numbers in the race, polls out every couple of weeks at least now, does it match up with the numbers you're talking about even? And maybe that's because those people who voted against the recall but weren't for Governor Walker in particular have switched sides, kind of?
Yes. I think some of those people may have gone to undecided, but more likely some of them said, well, I gave him a break 2 years ago, and now I'm open to it. There was a quote in that New York Times article of a lady who said she voted for Walker in the recall but is voting for Mary Burke now. So he's had a full four-year term to lay out his plans to move the state in the direction that he wanted, and he's going to lose some of those people that otherwise did not believe in recall.
Now, before we turn to the national stage, and that's a lot of what we're going to talk about, any other big differences in this race for governor versus 2 years ago in the recall or even 4 years ago when the governor was first elected?
Well, I think 4 years ago and 2 years ago, he was running against a Milwaukee mayor. And I recall very vividly that before the Democrats actually picked Mayor Barrett, The Walker administration basically had months of essentially putting ads on TV running. So he had months and months basically to get ready for that recall, whereas the Democratic nominee basically had a lot less. Secondarily, I recall the last 2 or 3 weeks of that recall race, it almost seemed as if Governor Walker was running not so much against Barrett, but against Milwaukee. There were a lot of ads that talked about how terrible Milwaukee was, crime, corruption, and you don't really want those people running the state of Wisconsin. Part of that explains why the governor did so well outstate areas. In other words, the rural areas in northern and western Wisconsin. Let's face it, Milwaukee is not held in high regard in the rural areas in Wisconsin. And this was an advantage, frankly, and I think he recognized it. With Mary Burke, obviously she's not from Milwaukee, so she has had benefit. However, some of the ads are popping up saying, you know, that Madison liberal or that Dane County liberal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you can't hit Milwaukee, go for Dane County or go for Madison. So that's it's not quite as solid, and I think that's part of the reason the governor's race is a lot closer.
Well, now, turning to the concept that kind of triggered this discussion, looking at what this election means for Governor Walker if he's considering a run for president in a couple of years, for the average person living outside of the state who, you know, maybe isn't closely following the daily twists and turns of Wisconsin's politics, is Scott Walker on their radar right now?
Yes, particularly some of the stronger right-wing interests in the United States. It's widely known that Governor Walker is getting more than a majority of his money from out of state, in other words. That means that national figures that moneyed interest in the Republican Party are very interested in his success. They see, and I don't think it's so much that they're interested in him running for the presidency necessarily. Maybe a few are, but I think they like his agenda a lot. They think he's a courageous right-wing person who is willing to push an agenda that they really enhance their position. So he's doing very well across the country. I recall just a couple months ago when the John Doe issue stuff is popping up, and there was a rumor that that Governor Walker's lawyer was attempting to make a deal to kind of get this off the radar before the election. And there is a series of several editorials in the Wall Street Journal about that issue and about Governor Walker. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't recall any time in my lifetime that the Wall Street Journal has had a series of articles, a series of editorials, essentially about the governor in the state of Wisconsin and the issues involved with the John Doe's. And that tells me that this is a national issue and a national story.
Well, if we're looking at the national picture and looking at a Republican donor from out of the state who's supporting Governor Walker now or back in the recall election, that isn't necessarily an indication they're thinking, hey, this guy is my choice for a presidential candidate. They might be thinking this is a prominent Republican governor who's made changes, is facing a big struggle, and I want him to set an example for other states.
Yeah, I think it's more the issue of the ideological issues of the right rather than assuming that he will become automatically a nominee for the presidency once he gets past this hurdle. It's hard to say what's in people's minds necessarily. For some, they may see him as the kind of candidate they'd really like to promote for the presidency. He's when you talk about four or five candidates nationally, possible candidates for the presidency on the Republican side, he's often mentioned. I have the Sabato's crystal ball from a couple weeks ago, and they had three tiers. The Democrats, by the way, just have one person in the top tier. You can figure out who that is. The Republicans had no one. I'm reading this right off. Absolutely nobody in the first tier. Second tier, they had Jeb Bush, Rand Paul, and Paul Ryan, interestingly enough. Third tier, Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, and Scott Walker. So that what it tells me is that he is, if you're just looking at this, he's in the top six, basically. So he's widely mentioned. I think Chris Christie is generally acknowledged to be in there. He wasn't listed in the top two tiers here, but he's certainly attempting to make a comeback as well. But it's very clear that if you name five or six people across America that are thinking of running for the presidency or that are national figures, Scott Walker is certainly one of them.
Well, I think if I were trying to make a sales pitch for Scott Walker over any of those other candidates except Jeb Bush, I might point to one statewide elections in very purple states, very closely divided states. This shows, hey, this is somebody who might be able to win swing states elsewhere in the country. Jeb Bush, similar story in Florida, perhaps.
Yeah, I think that's the issue that I think a lot of Republicans would see. First of all, he's a governor, and I think history says that governors start off with a better advantage than, say, U.S. senators or state representatives or national representatives. So he starts off with a base, and he's in from a purple state. If he can win several elections, three elections, for example, if he wins in November, he's won three elections in a very purple state, basically.
And then looking also at the governor's background here, I think somebody from the outside would look and say, okay, this guy has been through very hot, controversial elections. We're not going to get any surprises here. If anybody on the Democratic side has dirt on this guy, they have deployed it. Is that something that people think about when they're going through the process of figuring out who they support as a presidential candidate?
Well, a lot of the things that people would argue about nationally are certainly known in Wisconsin. You know, the John Doe 1 and 2, obviously, those are fairly big issues here. I think most of his, there's not too much in the closet, shall we say, that would really affect him nationally. The one thing I wonder about, however, while Wisconsin voters may not care too much whether he is or isn't a graduate of a four-year college, I wonder how that plays nationally with the national media, you know, whether he can pass that test of intellectual ability if you don't have a college degree. That would be very unusual, frankly. And you don't know how the press is going to handle that, obviously, until it actually occurs.
We're talking with Joe Heim, professor of political science at UW-La Crosse, about how the governor's race might affect Scott Walker's career ambitions going forward.
And we hope you'll join the conversation. Would Governor Walker, do you think, be a strong candidate among others on the national scene? Would losing this reelection bid mean game over for a presidential run? Get in touch with us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@WPR.org. You can also comment on the Central Time Facebook page. We're talking with Joe Heim, professor of political science at the UW-La Crosse. We're wondering how the outcome of the gubernatorial election 2 weeks from today will impact Governor Walker's possible presidential aspirations. The New York Times ran a front-page story yesterday declaring that Governor Walker needs to win Wisconsin if he wants to take his career to the next level.
And we want to hear from you. What do you expect to happen in the race for governor? Is it safe to assume that because Governor Walker survived a recall, he'll win this reelection handily or not? And what does it mean for a possible presidential run for the governor? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email talk@WPR.org. You can also tweet us at Central Time WPR. Joe, before we get to our callers, Wisconsin, right? Divided right down the middle. You named a list of possible presidential candidates, two of them on the Republican side from Wisconsin. I'm guessing zero on the Democratic side. Why is Wisconsin supplying these national contenders for the Republicans and not the Democrats?
Well, I think the Paul Ryan, of course, that's an obvious one. He was vice presidential nominee, and it's pretty common for a vice presidential nominee to think of themselves as a potential presidential as well. The story that I hear over is that they won't run against each other. They're good friends, basically, and Scott Walker is more likely to run than Paul Ryan. Ryan seems to be very comfortable in the House of Representatives. He's got a lot of influence there. He's a good legislator. I mean, he likes the legislative process, and if I had to bet, I would say that it would be Scott Walker more likely to run. The governor's been very careful about not totally closing that door. There was an issue asked a couple of weeks ago, you know, are you going to fill out your four-year term? And he's been very careful about saying he has no plans not to, things like that, but he is not committed necessarily to a four-year term. That opens up the door to considering that down the road, of course.
Yeah, but why no Democrats rising to that level of prominence? I mean, some people talked maybe Russ Feingold at some point, but that never really crystallized. Where are the prominent Wisconsin Democrats on the national stage?
You know, that's a very good question. I think the era of the last 5-6 years, the Republicans have clearly moved into greater prominence. I recall saying about 2 years ago that the fact that the Democrats had to bring back Mayor Barrett to run in the recall was, and if you looked at who else was running in that recall, that was an indication that the Democrats have a relatively shallow bench. And you could speculate about that, but for a variety of reasons, the Democrats that would be moving up to that level or at least thinking about it just aren't there, frankly. And without a strong bench, basically, of people moving up, you're not going to expect to have people at the presidential level. By the way, having a potential candidate for the presidency is a rare thing. Mm-hmm. You know, not many people, especially from the Midwest, there's a certain litmus test, if you want to call it that, for the presidential candidates. And a governor in Wisconsin or a Wisconsin politician, for a variety of reasons, just hasn't made that test for the most part. So I don't think it's a necessarily negative thing. I think it's somewhat of an honor to have a governor or anybody from Wisconsin being considered a presidential contender. I take it that, and I think a lot of voters would agree with that.
Let's get to our callers now. We've got Steve on the line in Neillsville. Steve, hi.
Yes, thanks for having me. With all due respect, we find a leader in not only Paul Ryan, but Mr. Walker himself, they're one of the same. And I'm telling you, he believes in the Constitution of the United States of America. He believes in our rights, our liberties, our freedoms. And that's what's going to get him in the White House. Because we, the people, are tired of a corrupt administration that lies to us and manipulates the law, doesn't honor the law, the rule of law, or honor the Constitution. We, the people, our votes say anything out in Wisconsin. We vote against gay marriage, and what do? The highest court in the land shoots our votes down. Scott Walker believes in we and the people, and he believes in the Constitution of the United States of America and the rule of law.
All right, Steve, thanks a lot for the call. Joe, I'm guessing, Steve, it's not an uncommon opinion here in Wisconsin. Are other people outside of Wisconsin maybe talking about Scott Walker in similar ways?
I think so, yes. I think what he attempted to do, say what you agree or disagree with Act 10 and collective bargaining, you have to give the guy a lot of credit for being very courageous. You may not agree with it, but it takes a lot of guts to do what he did, frankly. At least the stories I heard was that when he first floated that idea, a lot of Republicans were very nervous about it, and many said, don't do it, this is a dangerous thing. And, of course, it's led to the demonstrations, as we all know, and a very divided state. And I'm not sure that's all that healthy, but you have to say he gets things done. The Marquette poll mentioned that very positively that he does get things done, and that's very clear. And I think that's a quality that, frankly, people look forward to seeing, frankly, in a president.
Steve, thanks for the call. We'll go to Frank now in Onalaska. Frank, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm glad I followed up the caller from Galesville because I think our governor is exactly the opposite of the rule of law. And the professor alluded to skeletons in the closet, which the media tends to ignore if you get really quickly. I'll name at least six of them. Maybe I don't have time for all. I'll start with the corruption and mismanagement in Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, where a lot of funds have gone missing and unaccounted for. He's been associated with at least a half a dozen of his associates at the county and executive level that have been convicted of crimes. He's spending almost $1 million in defending his own administration and his campaign under the John Doe investigation. There's a question, particularly in light of his attack on our education system, as to exactly why he left Marquette. There's questions about whether he left because he was involved with a cheating scandal.
Gotcha, Frank. I want to jump in because we are limited on time, Joe, especially with things like the first John Doe ending up in some of his aides from Milwaukee County being convicted of felonies. Is that enough of a skeleton in the closet when he comes, and actually out of the closet, I guess, when it comes to the national stage to be a problem for him?
I'd have to say that one has been put to bed. That was a prominent issue. The Democrats tried to utilize that in the recall election. It didn't work. So I don't think that, call it Teflon if you want, a Teflon governor, but that one did not stick at all, frankly. The Wiedek issues, you could argue about it, but basically whether it touches the governor or not is the issue here. So it's, you know, it's in the Marquette story about the degree or the lack of a degree, that's privacy issues, and I doubt very much unless somebody sneaks that out the door that anybody's going to know much about it. So the skeletons, so far he's avoided being tainted by those skeletons.
Now, Philip on Facebook writes, there's no possibility that the Republican establishment would support a presidential nomination for Scott Walker. He says, there's no way that Wall Street money and the Georgetown cocktail circuit is going to allow a person to become president that failed to achieve an undergraduate degree from a small Midwestern school. Is that, do you think, something that would hurt him in the eyes of the Republican establishment?
It certainly could. I don't know if it would because it's so unusual. I don't think we've had a president since I think Harry Truman that did not have a college degree. So it's the kind of thing that could come back to haunt him because most people just assume a president should have that type of level of academic achievement. But so far, it hasn't affected him at all.
Well,
I don't know.
Of attack on that, I want to jump in, Joe. I mean, if Democrats attack him because of that, I think Tom Barrett tried to avoid doing that. It makes maybe the Democrats look elitist. A lot of voters themselves don't have college degrees.
Yeah, it does. And it's so it kind of cuts both ways, basically. I really think the national press is more important on that issue and how they handle it and whether they would make a big deal out of it or not. It certainly makes them unusual and different than other candidates.
So maybe a media self-criticism question here for us and the New York Times. Is it too soon to be thinking about the possibility of a Governor Walker presidential run, given we still have this governor's race to finish out here?
It's a little early. It sure is. Sometime in the spring semester, if he wins the election, there'll be further talk about this. People are jumping at this way too fast sometimes, and that includes talk about Hillary, frankly, as well.
So, what's to watch for 2 weeks from today? What's going to be the deciding factor, do you think, at our governor's race here in Wisconsin?
Well, I'm going to suggest a couple things. One is months ago, I talked to a Democrat who is pretty much in the know in Wisconsin. He said Governor Walker should never have run for re-election. And I said, really? Why? It's a good base to run for the presidency. He said he's got nothing to gain and a lot to lose. Hmm. And I thought that was an interesting thing. If you're really serious about the presidency, he was suggesting that that you should, you know, go ahead and run long and run hard and not worry about being a governor. I don't agree with it, but I thought I'd just tell you that. If he loses this election, I think it seriously damages any potential for him running for the presidency. If he wins close, I think that would call into question whether or not he is, you know, if you win in this state, that's one thing. But, you know, if you win a really close election, I'm not sure that would help him, frankly, at all. If he wins by a substantial margin, however, and frankly, I think that's what would be necessary for to propel him into the presidential talking points for that.
Joe, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
That's Joe Heim, professor of political science at UW-La Crosse.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll be talking with the two candidates running for the open seat in Wisconsin's 19th Senate District.
Right now, we're continuing our series of forums with the candidates running for governor here in Wisconsin. Yesterday, we spoke to the third-party candidates in the race. Libertarian Robert Burke and Dennis Fehr of the People's Party joined us.
There are two other candidates in the race. You might have heard of them by now. We'll talk to one of them today. We offered Governor Scott Walker the opportunity to join us for a candidate forum he was unable to accept. We turn now to the Democratic challenger in the race, Mary Burke. She's a former executive for Trek Bicycles and served as Commerce Secretary under Governor Jim Doyle's administration.
She joins us in our Madison studios now. Mary, thanks for being here today.
Well, Veronica and Rob, it's great to be here and great to be with your listeners.
Mary, we've talked a lot about your campaign in the last 6 months or so on the show, but this is our first time getting a chance to talk with you. So let's hear it from you directly. Why are you running for governor of Wisconsin?
I'm concerned about the direction that we're headed, and I'm a fourth-generation Wisconsinite. I know Wisconsin has everything that we need to be a thriving, growing leader in this country in terms of our economy, our education system, and the path that we're on right now makes me feel like if we have four more years of Governor Walker, I'm not going to recognize the state that I know and that I love so deeply. And so I'm going to use the business experience that I have along with the education experience to lead Wisconsin in a way that puts the divisiveness aside. It does not have to be the way that it has been. And that tone, it gets set by the governor. And so I believe in finding common ground, bringing people together, focusing on ideas that are going to work. I don't care if they're Democratic or Republican ideas, just whether they're going to get results here. And I have been in this race for about a year, and I get more and more excited every single day that I'm out there about the potential, the incredible potential that we have in this state.
Now, the latest polls suggest that the race is a dead heat between yourself and Governor Walker. As you said, Wisconsin is a polarized state right now politically, and Governor Walker has made controversial decisions during his time in office. So given that, there are people who are not so much saying they'll support Mary Burke, but rather the candidate who isn't Scott Walker. So how do you get people excited about Mary Burke, the candidate, and as a result, get them to the polls?
The more people get to know me and how I would lead the state forward, my background and what I have done in my career and the values that I hold, people get more and more excited. And what I talk about every day as I am out on the campaign trail are some pretty simple concepts. They're about making sure that everyone has a fair shot to get ahead as long as they're prepared to do the hard work. And what we are seeing is that more and more families are being stretched. They're being squeezed. And recent data shows that the typical Wisconsin family actually lost nearly $3,000 in their income over the last 4 years. And so we know people are working harder than ever, but feeling like they have less and less to show for it. So a fair shot means about having great, affordable public education, starting with kindergarten, going all the way through university. I want to invest in our schools, not cut them like Governor Walker has. I want to make higher education more affordable. It shouldn't be the size of your family's pocketbook that determines whether you attend and earn a degree, whether it's from technical college or from university. It should be about your dreams and your hard work. And a fair shot means a growing economy that is producing more good-paying jobs. It also means having small businesses that are starting and growing, and it means increasing the minimum wage. So there are a lot of things that are we need to put in place that we can put in place, and I know that when everyone has that opportunity and the supports to build that successful life, that's how our society benefits as well. And so that's what I talk to people about every day. And it is common sense, but unfortunately, it's not happening a lot. And what we have seen under Governor Walker is he has given tax breaks to those at the top while leaving 41,000 people on the wait list for need-based financial assistance for technical colleges and universities. So to leave 41,000 people on the wait list for financial aid and give tax breaks to those at the top, frankly, doesn't do what is necessary to grow our economy. Our economy will grow.
Let's zoom in on jobs. Sure. We've been talking about that a bit, which is easily election issue number one. Now, you've taken some criticism for your jobs plan and where the content of some of it comes from. Can you start by addressing that?
I've been straight from the start, is that my jobs plan is about the best ideas that are going to make sure that Wisconsin has a thriving economy.
But in terms of allegations of content of some of it being drawn from other sources, other candidates in different states.
Sure. The fact is that in drawing great ideas from all over the country, I did use a consultant that works on public policy, and that he took similar language of his own language that he used in other plans. And he shouldn't have done that. And that's why we cut ties with them. And any of the other things that were cited are ones where actually they are cited in the plan and attributed.
And on a related note, let's talk about getting people back to work. How do you do that? The specifics of your job plan. How do you get people who are looking for work back into a job?
There are a lot of things that go into it. There is not one simple thing, and that's why my jobs plan does lay out five core strategies to doing that. I'll just focus on a couple of them. First and foremost is around education and training, is that we have to make sure that people, when they are graduating from high school, are ready for the job market or to go to that next step, whether it's technical college or university. We have too many high school students who are not graduating with those skills or not graduating at all. And so I propose that we redefine high school to be that first step on a career path. We then have to make sure that higher education, whether it's technical college or university, is aligned with workforce needs, but also that it is affordable. Another area of that five core strategies is small business growth and startups. It actually is small business growth and new business startups that account for 70% of the jobs that are created. And right now, under Governor Walker, we're in the bottom five states in the entire country in terms of our new businesses started. So we have to increase the amount of access to capital that small businesses have to be able to start up and grow. That's a part of it. And you also have to create those type of mentoring support relationships, access to that type of skills that help small businesses overcome the challenges that they face. I started my own business when I was in my 20s. I know the challenges that entrepreneurs face, but I also know how to overcome those challenges and the opportunities that we have. And we have to change this around. We have to have a more entrepreneurial culture and more tools for entrepreneurs if we're going to succeed.
Right. And in that same vein, how would you go about that, making Wisconsin a place that was more desirable for entrepreneurs to come to start businesses in?
Capital is one of them. And there was a start to a venture fund, which would have made access to capital better. But the fact was, is they set it up with $25 million. Now, for statewide, $25 million is not going to move the needle. What it felt like to me is that was a box to check to say, as politicians, okay, we did that. Well, I'm a business person. I look at what you actually have to do to move the needle. Other states around us have $200 million venture funds and have actually seen a lot of results come from that. In addition, when that $25 million fund was set up, it excluded any investments, any financing or capital for life science companies. Well, that's actually a growing part of our economy. So again, putting politics before common sense. And you know what? That's not going to happen. When I'm governor, I'm going to put the common sense, I'm going to put ideas that work ahead of the politics.
Now, projections suggest that the next governor could face a budget shortfall. We don't know the extent of that yet. But on day one of being governor, should you be elected, what actions would you take to get the state's fiscal house in order?
I have a 30-year career, and through most of it, I've had to balance budgets. And so it is tough work. But the fact is, we got in this position because of the decisions that Governor Walker made. So he has taken a situation of a surplus and one budget later turned it into a $1.8 billion deficit. He did this by two things. First, he spent money we don't have. So in this year alone, this fiscal year alone, we're spending $400 million more than we're taking in. And that's a projection of what we're taking in. The other reason is the state's economy is lagging. We're not even meeting our own forecast in terms of revenues coming in. And so unfortunately, by these decisions and what Governor Walker has done, we are facing a really tough budget going into the next budget cycle. So back to your question of what am I going to do is you got to go line item by line item through the budget, figure out what really needs to be spent, set priorities. I want to set priorities based on what impacts our economy, both in the short term and long term. And then you have to go through and figure out what you can't afford to do. In the long term, we have got to grow our economy, because if Wisconsin's economy had just grown at the same rate as the national economy, just kept pace with the rest of the country, our economy would be $4 billion a year bigger. $4 billion, that is money that gets spent in our communities and in our businesses. It's also additional tax base on which to invest in education and important infrastructure while reducing taxes and balancing your budget. So in the long term, the big issue we have here in Wisconsin, we got to be growing the economy.
Now, after his election, Governor Walker's answer to a budget shortfall was Act 10. It balanced the budget but launched a recall effort, and it increased political polarization to a level that the state hadn't seen before. As governor, would you repeal Act 10?
What I would do is to work to restore collective bargaining. And I have been straight from the start to saying, I think it was only fair to ask for contributions to health care and to pensions. That's what my guess is 99% of the people in the private sector face. But on the same time, we have to make sure that we are adequately paying people in the public sector, because it's important to be able to attract and keep good people in the public sector. I know from my experience as an executive with Trek Bicycle, an organization is only as good, only as effective as the people in it. And so whether we are hiring engineers or whether we're hiring IT people, I want to make sure we're able to attract and keep good people. So contributions to healthcare and to pensions, I think, are fair. But we also have to make sure that we are overall looking at compensation and saying we're adequately funding it.
We're talking right now with Mary Burke, Democratic candidate for governor of Wisconsin. If you've got a question for Mary or you're wondering where she stands on an issue, you can call us now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're talking now with Mary Burke, the Democratic candidate for governor of Wisconsin. And if you've got a question for her, you can join us now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@WPR.org. One quick programming note, we spoke to the two third-party candidates in the race, Dennis Fehr and Robert Burke, yesterday on the show. We also invited Governor Walker to appear on the program, but he was unable to join us. And we go now to our phones. We have Mitch with us from Madison. Hi, Mitch.
Hello. Mary, I wanted to ask if you had heard about the proposals from three Wisconsin utilities to increase the fixed fee on the on their bills, and if you support or oppose this regressive billing scheme.
Mitch, it's a good question and an important one. And I'm very concerned by the size of those increases. I understand the issue with regards to paying for the fixed infrastructure, the transmission that all users need. But I also think that people invested in solar systems and that they did that with the expectation of what sort of charges or reductions in charges they would be able to save in terms of paying for those systems, and to sort of change the rules after this, I don't think is fair to consumers. So I think we have to make sure that we are able to keep a good infrastructure for energy transmission and generation if you're still on the grid, but also understand I'd like to see solar grow, and I am concerned that these sorts of rate increases will put a real damper on not only the existing solar, but growing solar in Wisconsin.
Mitch, thank you so much for your call. And Mary, some of your Republican critics have suggested that a vote for you is a vote for Jim Doyle II. Now, you served as Commerce Secretary under Governor Doyle, so it may be fair for people to think you could pursue similar policies. Can you talk about what you do similarly to Jim Doyle and what you would do differently?
Well, I think that the Republican opponents I have, and Governor Walker seems to believe that they would rather be running against Jim Doyle than myself. But we're two very different people. I come at this from a business perspective. I've spent my career mainly in business. That's how I approach things. I don't think I don't look at ideas and say that's a Democratic or Republican idea. I look and say, is it something that is going to work, that is going to move us ahead? And I didn't agree with Governor Doyle in terms of the money he took out of the transportation fund. I didn't agree with the tuition increases. But let's put this in perspective. My job was overseeing the Department of Commerce. I was Secretary of Commerce, and I wasn't part of decision making on all the issues that weren't directly related to commerce. And so there's many different areas that I wouldn't necessarily agree on, but I wasn't part of those.
Well, we'll go back to our callers now and take one from Justin in Green Bay. Hi, Justin.
Hi, Ms. Burke. As an independent, I'm kind of on the fence, and one of my major issues would be the concealed carry. Not really concerned on what your viewpoint on it is, but would you consider repealing it or leave it as it is? Thank you.
Justin, I'm glad you asked that because I support Second Amendment rights, and I think Wisconsin's concealed carry law is fine at the point at which it was passed. We were one of only two states in the country that didn't allow it. And so I don't think that this gets in the way of making sure that we do keep guns out of the hands of those who are mentally ill and criminals. And so I do want to work with law enforcement. I do have the support and endorsement of the 10,000 members of the Wisconsin Professional Police Association. And I want to make sure that people feel safe and are safe. And that's whether your parents and your kids are going off to a movie theater, whether you're in your own home, whether your kids are on the playground. And so I support those rights to bear arms and for concealed carry. But I do want to be clear that I do want to make sure that people feel safe and we keep firearms out of the hands of those who are mentally ill and criminals.
All right. Thank you for the call, Justin. And next we go to Pat in Barneveld. Hi, Pat.
Hi. My question is, I think property taxes in Wisconsin are absurd, and I want to know what the candidate will do to lower those property taxes, because as well as the caller before, I'm an independent as well.
Pat, I'll tell you, I'm right there with you. I'll tell you, I think anyone who gets that bill in December sort of has a little bit of a sticker shock, and property taxes are high here. We need to look, and I'm going to work, I'll say right off the bat, I am going to work to reduce property taxes. The thing is, we have to understand what property taxes are funding. They're funding our schools, and they're funding our local communities in terms of shared services, your snow plowing, your streets, your police, your fire. And so what I want to do is to be able to greater support education on the state level so that it doesn't fall so heavily on property tax holders. And what we have seen is that the state has been declining their share of education. In fact, just in this school year alone, actually, the under Governor Walker's budget, 200 school districts across the state. So nearly half of them, 46% of the school districts, actually saw their state aid cut. And in many of those school districts, enrollments actually increased or stayed the same, but yet state support went down. And this was a compromise. Actually, Governor Walker's budget would have had less money going into public education. And this was sort of a compromise, and still 200 school districts saw that cut. What that does is it kicks the can. It basically passes the buck to local school districts and local property tax holders to be able to continue to provide quality education. So I believe our schools, our local communities, municipalities, they need to be accountable, need to be efficient and economical, accountable to taxpayers. But it makes it harder and harder when the state support is declining and the state isn't doing their fair share. So we need to be able to prioritize and support our communities in our state budget, which then helps to lower or reduce or hold down those property taxes.
Great. Well, thank you for that call. And we're going to move on to an environmental question next. One issue we've been tracking here regularly on Central Time is frac sand mining in the state. Now, the industry's booming, but it's been carrying controversy with it. Would you seek additional regulations on the industry?
What we need to do is, first of all, I do want to make sure that local communities are able to set the type of regulations that they feel is necessary, that local elected officials have that flexibility. What we saw in the last legislative session was actually some movement to try to take away some of the local control that permits them to regulate some of the mining industry. But some of that regulation is just not feasible by local governments. Things when you talk about monitoring air quality and setting what the standard should be for that. I want to make sure that people in our communities feel that their water, that their air is safe. And so those are areas we should look at, whether that is something that the state should get involved in order to protect that. But I feel that we can balance job creation and still have safe communities with regards to our air and our water. But right now, it's sort of the Wild West out there.
Now, lastly, I want to ask you about the polarization in the state. We talked about that a bit, and the political division extends to the legislature as well. Republicans and Democrats and the Assembly have grown increasingly estranged. We've seen long-term senators stepping down from their positions, citing polarization, a toxic atmosphere in the state legislature. What specific steps would you take as we wrap up now in order to address and improve that culture?
Day one, I'm going to sit down with the Republican leadership in the legislature, talk about how we can find common ground. I think that we can. I have already sat down, this was maybe 6 months ago, I did outreach to Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, WMC, probably Governor Walker's biggest supporter in the state of Wisconsin. But I wanted to sit down and to see whether we could find common ground. And I walked away after an hour cup of coffee and said, I believe that we can. And so that's what it's going to take. It's going to take a real effort and a real tone that says, hey, we're going to move forward as a state when we put the divisiveness aside, we find the common ground, and we work together. We're Wisconsinites first and foremost. We're actually on the same team. Sometimes I think the politicians forget that.
We leave it there. Mary, thank you for joining us today.
Hey, thanks so much. It's great to be here.
Mary Burke is a Democratic candidate for governor. If you missed any of this forum, we'd like to hear it again or hear the conversations we had yesterday with the third-party gubernatorial candidates, Dennis Fehr and Robert Burke. Head on over to wisconsinvote.org. You'll also find the audio from these interviews and get information on our upcoming forums as well.